As we've seen from the investigations of many of the California wildfires, it's been either electrical equipment or power lines that have sparked those fires. Then they've spread rapidly, of course, in high winds. That's been a problem for Pacific Gas and Electric in Northern California. Here in Southern California, where SoCal Edison is the primary provider, they are looking at, as a precaution, potentially cutting off electricity. With us for the latest on that, KPCC infrastructure correspondent Sharon McNary. Sharon, thank you very much for joining us.
You bet.
So the people that were warned on Sunday that there could be power turned off prophylactically to date, we have a count on how many got the warning?
About 89,000 customers. So, you know, far more people involved because one customer per house, right?
Yeah.
And most of those are in San Bernardino and Riverside counties. There might be some, I think, also in Altadena. Mostly we're going to be looking at those foothill areas where fire can, you know, spark in a rural mountainous area and then travel quickly down the hill.
I was looking at some of them, like the Highway 14 corridor through the high desert area. You've got, you know, notorious winds, actually.
Oh, notorious.
From Fontana all the way.
Absolutely. Lytle Creek.
Yeah.
I mean, I've actually stood on Lytle Creek Bridge as those, like, massive winds are coming through. So, yeah, we're talking about, like, up in the mountains, Arrowhead all the way out to Big Bear, you know, Crestline, those communities out in Riverside County, Idlewild, and some places have had some pretty serious recent fires as well.
Have we had this happen before in Southern California, Edison territory?
You know, Edison has always had the right and the ability to shut down the power. But what has happened in recent years, they hadn't really done it. You'd see it more often in San Diego County, San Diego Gas and Electric. But in Southern California, Edison territory, they hadn't really done it until Idlewild in December 2017. And at that time, they cut off power to 5,000 residents as a protective measure. And then just last week, Monday, in Mono County, they cut off power to 14,000 customers, mostly up in the Mammoth area. So imagine you go on this nice vacation and you're having romantic candlelight dinners because there's no power.
Yeah. And so this is a challenge. And of course, it can be even more serious than that because you've got people reliant in some cases on medical equipment for which they need power, and long-term outage could be a problem.
Yeah. And we can get into the whole idea of, you know, if you live in one of these areas, how to prepare for a lengthy shutdown. People who've lived in the mountains for years, they get power shut offs, you know, just the power goes out because there's a storm or snow or something. And they know, like, to check the freezer and keep a glass of ice cubes in there. And if you come back after a couple of weeks away and your ice is now ice block, that means your freezer turned off and your water melted and maybe your meat is not going to be so good if it refroze.
Good tip, Sharon.
Yeah. So, you know, there's things you can do to really prepare and keep your food safe, keep your family safe, and keep your home safe.
All right. We'll continue our conversation with Sharon as well as with a spokesman for Southern California Edison. We'll talk about the prospects for planned power outages in wind-prone areas of Southern California. This in an effort to reduce the risk of fires that could start with downed power lines. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Back in just 1 minute. If you have questions about potential power outages in Southern California, these would be strategic outages carried out by Southern California Edison. Let us know. We have a spokesman from Edison joining us momentarily. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. With us, KPCC infrastructure correspondent Sharon McNary, and also joining us from Southern California Edison, Robert LaFoon Villegas. Mr. LaFoon Villegas, thank you for being with us today. Do you have an update on sort of the odds of us getting some of those planned outages today?
Well, I can tell you that right now, starting on Sunday, we know we've notified roughly 90,000 customers in Southern California, primarily in San Bernardino and Riverside counties. that their circuits are currently being monitored for a potential public safety power shutoff. So far, we haven't had to turn off any circuits, but we are keeping a close eye on the conditions on the ground. As you can imagine, many of the mountain communities and foothill communities that are affected are looking at the possibility of some very severe winds combined with the fuel situation on the ground that's making them prone to potential catastrophic wildfires. So we're looking at those circuits closely. And depending on what we see, the actual conditions on the ground will dictate if it becomes necessary to turn off the power.
How granular is that feedback that you're getting on wind or temperatures? Do you have micro weather stations or do you rely on the National Weather Service? What are you getting?
Well, we look at larger computerized models and the National Weather Service, but we also have our own in-house meteorologists, and we get data from several hundred weather stations that are attached to equipment in fire-sensitive, fire-prone areas. And so we look at weather specifically in the locations where our equipment is, down to swaths as narrow as a quarter mile. So, you know, for customers, they may be seeing a weather forecast on television or seeing it online. And those are generally regional forecasts. So, you know, a forecast will be high desert or it'll be mountains. But it won't be specific the way that we're looking at it. The other thing that we do is we actually have crews and troublemen in the field who we have patrolling these circuits that we're monitoring. So there actually is a human being also armed with some portable weather equipment to patrol the individual circuit and actually inform us up to date in real time conditions on the ground. So we're combining the computer modeling, the weather modeling, the fire hazard for fuels on the ground, along with individual observations.
So let's say, for example, you're getting a report that in the Banning Pass, the winds have picked up considerably there. When you get that report with someone constantly monitoring, how long does it take for you to say, okay, we're going to have to shut it down and we've got to alert people? How do you alert people you're doing it?
Well, what we do is we've been monitoring the weather consistently. We try to provide at least 24 hours worth of notice to any potentially impacted customers. So we'll do some notifications as far as 48 hours in advance if we have good confidence in the forecast. And then every 24 hours, we'll update customers. Are you still on the watch list? Is this something you have to be concerned about? Or we will notify them with an all clear if the weather and conditions have passed. Once they receive notifications, and like I said, they'll receive notifications every 24 hours, daily update. Once something happens, we strive to provide some notification closer to the shutoff once we know if we have an opportunity to see it. But if it's a severe weather change that comes quickly, that's a decision that can be taken very, very fast.
But how fast are we talking about? Can you cut the power within 5 minutes, or is this a process that takes you an hour?
Well, we do have some analytics that we do, but once we have a circuit being monitored, we're constantly doing the analytics on what is the situation on the ground. And then with the intelligence that we get from people in the field, if we hear from our field people, listen, I just took the wind gauge. Here's what's really happening out on the circuit. Shut it off now. We will do it almost instantly.
Wow, it's that fast. Okay. And what precautions do you take or communication do you have with customers who rely on medical equipment, which requires, you know, constant electricity? How do you deal with those residences or institutional settings?
Well, one of the things that we do is we work with essential customers, hospitals, law enforcement, fire services, as well as county and city emergency operations center ahead of the potential to de-energize, to work with them and look at what facilities might be impacted. Many of those essential facilities have backup generation, so it's very important that we provide them with notification directly and that we work through the county and city EOCs As far as our customers go, we do have critical care customers that we know about who participate in our critical care customer program. We provide notifications for them, and we will also do if we cannot reach them, so we must make positive contact. So it's not just a matter of I sent you an email or I sent you a text or voice message. If we do not make positive contact with one of our critical care customers, we will follow up for any outage of that's going to be a long duration outage, including going door to door and doing door knocks with our customer service folks to ensure that that person has received notice and that they've taken their emergency plan in hand. But as you can imagine, one of the most important things is to sign up for those notifications, and customers can do that at SEE.com/PSPS, Public Safety Power Shutoff. And then the other and equally important.
We'll put that on the website. I just want to interject, Robert. We'll put a link to that on the website for people to be able to sign up for that. Go right ahead. Sorry.
That's terrific. And the other thing is the emergency preparations ahead of time. We have many vulnerable customers. They need to be prepared in the event that the power goes out, and it could be something as mundane as a car hitting a pole in their neighborhood and them losing power for 12 hours while we make those emergency repairs. Could be a metallic balloon in lines, or it could be an earthquake or a flood or any other sort of natural disaster, a wildfire that affects their service. We all need to be prepared in advance. And then when we provide notifications, should the power go out, folks are in a position to kick their emergency plan into action and not have to struggle thinking, oh, how am I going to respond to this emergency? We had the earthquake in Ridgecrest recently, and that, you know, gives us a little kickstart, you know, each time that there's an event like that. But then we all become a little bit complacent as time goes by. We eat our power bars and drink the water out of our emergency kits. You know, we forget what plans we've made. We are asking customers all across the service territory, not just for public safety power shutoffs, which are a possibility in high fire situations, high fire risk, but in every situation, the dangers that we face here in the Southland are significant for events. Please be prepared in advance. If you need backup batteries for your medical equipment, that stuff that's available, many people rely on oxygen. Still having that backup oxygen tank as opposed to an electrical device is still something that needs to be considered by customers. And, of course, a plan to take care of people who are that you're related to who are elderly or disabled.
Rob, before I let you go, just quickly, how small an area can you black out to try and prevent a fire? Can you target it into, you know, small neighborhoods?
Well, here's what we do. We do not de-energize a region-by-region type approach. We do a circuit-by-circuit approach.
So how big is a circuit? What does that serve?
A circuit could be anything from a small residential area, 10 homes, 20 homes, 100 homes, to some larger circuits that could be 300 or 400 customers. So what we will do is we will only turn off the power to an individual circuit if the conditions on the ground merit it for that particular circuit, which is why we have real-time observation on those circuits, because it makes it possible to impact the fewest number of customers, still protecting communities from a possible catastrophe. So it's very important. You know, we've been in business 130 years, and our people spend day and night ensuring that the power stays on. That's been our job for 130 years.
So it's got to be weird to be talking about intentionally turning the power off.
It is a very shift in mindset. But what we've learned from the scale and the ferocity of fires over the last several years is that their entire communities and lives are at risk. And so we have to change the way we operate. So we've been, you know, talking with our field staff who are accustomed literally in a storm situation to work day and night to restore power, that telling them, listen, we might have to turn it off. And then the work will be in reinspecting and inspecting that circuit to make sure everything's okay after the weather passes.
All right. Robert, I need to break, but thank you so much. I appreciate your talking with our listeners about, in these wind-prone areas, the potential for outages as a safety measure to avoid wildfires sparked by downed lines. That's Robert Lafoon-Villegas joining us from Southern California Edison. And I want to go back to our infrastructure correspondent, Sharon McNary, because we're talking about generators. And what are some of the things to keep in mind if someone's in this area looking to buy one?
Yeah, and that would include me. I'm thinking I should have that in my own home. I learned this just last year, something I didn't know, that it's actually not a great idea to tie the generator into your home whole house power system, because when the power people come back to reconnect your neighborhood, the power that's flowing through your house can actually flow back out to the street and shock those workers.
Ooh.
So it's actually better if you've got one of those backyard generators, plug just the essential items you need into
fans,
that.
Refrigerator,
yeah, exactly. Just plug in those few essential items and run those off the generator. You know, the other thing, you know, if you have meds that need to be, you know, kept cold, you know, fill an ice chest with ice and put your meds in there if you're losing your refrigeration and you're afraid to put them in the freezer. You know, just little things. Have a solar charger for your phone. I use one in the field, and it'll keep two or three charges for my phone. And I can stick it on the dashboard of my car and, you know, keep things going if I don't have a source of electricity. So just little things like that. Really think about what I would do if the lights were out and the power is out. How am I going to keep my home and family safe?
All right. Sharon, thank you so much for coming in and talking about this. We appreciate it. And she'll be on the story, KPECCLAS.com, with the very latest information. Sharon McNary, KPECC infrastructure correspondent. Coming up, we're going to be talking about a fascinating new book, Fentanyl Inc., How Rogue Chemists Are Creating the Deadliest Wave of the Opioid Epidemic. If you are a recreational drug user at all, you want to listen to this, because there's some pretty frightening information included in the book Fentanyl Inc. We're going to get to that right after a live update from Michelle Faust-Raghavan.